Blog Talk Radio. You're listening to The Whole Scoop Radio with your host, Carol Ferraci, your health and wellness resource, where you get the whole scoop and nothing but the scoop.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Whole Scoop. We are the Health and Wellness Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. We are the ones where our guests are always highly credentialed in the fields and the topics that we discuss. That is the stipulation for being on the show. I am your host, Carol Ferraci, a registered licensed dietitian practicing for over 30 years and the founder of Naturally Nutrition. You can check me out at www.naturallynutritioninc.com. So if you haven't listened to the show, then you know that if you haven't, then you don't know that it's my goal, it's always been my goal to bring you, to provide you with highly qualified guests on a variety of topics, and we do. We talk about all kinds of things on this show in order to promote your own health and wellness that will allow you to make informed decisions. So that's what this show is all about. Thank you for joining us tonight. Tonight's show is we're concluding a three-part series on with Dr. Christopher Bump, and I'll tell you about him in just a second because he's just fabulous, and I'm so excited that we got to do these three shows with him. We're talking about Alzheimer's, dementia, and the autoimmune response. And, well, we're going to talk about a lot of different things in a lot of different ways, kind of give you a perspective that maybe you haven't heard and kind of just let you think a little bit. So that all being said, I'm going to remind you that while our guests are highly credentialed on the topics of discussion, it's always recommended to seek medical advice prior to implementing any and all interventions on this program or that are discussed. The call-in number is 347-855-8894. You can also direct questions and comments to us on our Facebook Blog Talk Radio group page. And please do that. Join us. Give us feedback. Tell us what you like. Tell us what you don't like. Tell us where you think we should improve. We're absolutely always looking for that. 347-855-8894. Feel free to call in. And if you want to call in and ask a question, please press the number 1 to get in the queue for questions. We will be taking those questions later on. And sometimes what I've noticed is that some of you wait for somebody else to ask the question or you see what's on the blog before you actually have to get on the air. I understand that. I'm just thrilled that you're here. We're just happy that you're participating. And remember that all of our shows are archived, so if you miss anything or if you have to, like, you know, go answer the door or something, access those archives, see what you missed, share it, you know, Facebook it, do whatever, let people know. That's what the goal of the show is, to let people know. So all that being said, I'm going to tell you that Dr. Christopher Bump joins us again. We're honored to have him. I'm so honored that he's done three of our shows this year and that he's just such a wealth of information, and it's been amazing with him. But let me just tell you, Dr. Christopher Bump has created a unique model of healthcare by integrating functional medicine and chiropractic. With numerous academic achievements and over 30 years of experience in clinical nutrition, Dr. Bump is a diplomat with the Chiropractic Board of Clinical Nutrition, where he presides over the Education Committee, as well as serving as chairperson of the Nutrition Education Council for the New Jersey State Chiropractic Association. He has taught clinical nutrition at Columbia University and continues to lecture throughout the country at many nutritional symposia. You'll find him at www.drbump.com. And with that, let's say hello to Dr. Bump. Hey, Dr.
Well,
Bump.
Good evening, Carol. It's nice
How
to
are
be back.
You today?
And I'm very fine, thank you. It's nice and warm and a beautiful summer evening up here in northern New Jersey. It's
wonderful.
Thank you again for having me on. It's been a pleasure.
It's been fascinating, you know, I'm beginning to sound like my own cliche here, but there's never enough time to actually get through these shows. But with you, the topics of which we've discussed of late, We could probably finish out the year with each and every show on these topics and still not get.
I totally agree. You know, the concept of autoimmunity, because it's such a not only a hot topic, but it's the incidence is increasing at such a rapid pace, and there's so much information available to us now about what the processes are. I think it's a viable, wonderful, and appropriate and timely topic, and to spend just 3 hours touching upon it gives it a little exposure. But you know, you're right. We could spend weeks and weeks talking about this concept or this disease process. Certainly.
Absolutely. And on that note, I just want to kind of let everybody know that we're talking about the autoimmune response and dementia, but that doesn't mean that we're going to talk about a direct correlation between dementia and any autoimmune response. What I'd like to do is I'd like to pick up kind of where we left off, explain the inflammatory response a little bit, just very briefly, because we've talked about it so much, but then kind of wrap it around as to how dementia can be a part of this, and show that everything that happens in the body is connected, and so there can be a correlation. There are some statistics to show that, you know, certain people with heart disease have a higher risk for dementia. Other people with other types of autoimmune responses have higher risks for dementia. So those are the things that we're going to talk about tonight. And Dr. Bump, is it true? I mean, I know it's true, but maybe it's important if we start with, I think people have a way of thinking that if you have dementia, you automatically have Alzheimer's. And Alzheimer's is just a type of dementia, correct?
Correct. I would use a broader category of description for including both dementia and Alzheimer's, and that would be cognitive decline or neurodegenerative conditions. So the commonality between Alzheimer's and dementia is cognitive decline. There's some type of loss of neuronal function in both conditions, as there are in others as well, such as Parkinson's or MS, which are more typically classified as autoimmune conditions. Alzheimer's is not, but the loss of cognition is the hallmark that would tie these conditions together, and it's. And what I hope that we can share this evening is the physiological links, i.e. the underlying causes and mechanisms of these neurodegenerative processes, Carol. Yes.
Okay. So why don't we do this? Why don't we just kind of you mentioned earlier to me, when you and I were just speaking individually, that it used a great term. You used a downstream approach. So why don't we take a disease process, if you will. Let's just pick one. Let's pick Parkinson's, and show how that downstream approach could lead to a dementia.
Well, what I would do with something, a condition such as Parkinson's, which has a very clear and specific neural degeneration through the substantia nigra and the loss of function from a decrease in that area of the brain. What would be helpful for the listeners to understand is that the brain, and its functions, and the conditions associated with neurodegeneration have great similarities. And what I think would be valuable is to speak about these similarities, because they really are downstream, the commonalities. And what I mean by that is in traditional allopathic medicine, looking at the endpoint expression of a disease process, like in Alzheimer's, it's looking at beta amyloid protein buildup or plaque buildup in the brain. But that's a defense mechanism of the brain because of a chronic inflammatory, chronic toxic, something that has happened in that individual's life for years and years prior to the onset of these symptoms that express as Alzheimer's. In Parkinson's, it's a similar process. In Parkinson's, there's a direct correlation, for instance, in Epstein-Barr virus and toxic elements, that is, heavy metals. And so what would happen in an individual such as Parkinsonians, say they had a chronic immunological challenge due to a Epstein-Barr viral infection when they were 30, leading to a chronic low-grade immunological response that then is amplified, say, by lifestyle, where one is eating saturated fats or refined wheats, sugars, the like, with, say, coloring agents and additives, all of which are immune-stimulating substances, and you take an immune system that's already ramped up because of a chronic Epstein-Barr exposure, and it leads to a systemic inflammatory change. There's correlations. Now, I need to be careful here, Carol, because I could go off on these deep, long tangents about how the gut microbiome and its effect on the gut barrier leading to inflammatory changes in the gut lining would lead to leaky gut, which then lead to changes in the blood-brain barrier. But, you know, I don't want to we can talk about these things.
Well, yeah, we can break that apart a little bit later if you want. That'd be good. That, I think, would be very helpful.
Yes.
But I said something. Let me just back up a little bit here, because I'm going to break it down a little bit further based on what you started to say, if that's okay with you.
Sure.
The immune system in itself. You know, when you talk about autoimmune responses, when you talk about inflammatory responses, the immune system is activated when there's an inflammatory response, and the immune system stays activated because it feels like it needs to do its job, and its ultimate job is to protect the body from foreign, and what it considers to be a foreign invader of any kind. And so the overworking of that immune system then can lead to an inflammatory response, meaning that it just kind of wears down the body. What I heard you say in a different way, and correct me if we need to clarify, but what I heard you say, that people that may have been exposed to heavy metals for a long period of time, like, say, just exposed to heavy metals, those same people that may have not had the best of diets and were that further complicated matters by ingesting chemicals that weren't easily processed in the body and then created some kind of sludge or buildup, could ultimately then enhance the degradation or the destruction of the immune system in some way, and then lead to it being this ultimate series of events, including Epstein-Barr, including Parkinson's or some type of response, including anything else that might be related, and then maybe ultimately get to some type of dementia. Would you agree with that process?
Yeah, I might clarify it a little bit in this regard. Humans are designed to for self-protection. You know, we've developed 3-point-some million years of developmental biology with our immune system being really acutely aware and sensitized to what is us and what is not. So, and I think I spoke about this several sessions ago about the immune system. It must be able to defend us, to sense friend from foe. That is what is who we are, and protect us, and to keep that out of us or attack that which doesn't belong in us. And what the most modern degenerative conditions are about are some insult to the immune system that keeps it chronically upregulated. So if you think about our ancestors, they may have had an infection from a battle wound, but that's all they would have had to deal with. They wouldn't have had to deal with refined foods or coloring agents or toxic elements in great depth. Or so in our current environments, there are so many life choices and exposures that we have environmentally. Some we choose, some we don't. So we can't always choose the air that we breathe, as an example. But we are so inundated with insult in our bodies that our immune system is constantly upregulated. And when it becomes upregulated, that's where the danger switches can become highly sensitized, where we may start to react to self because it looks somewhat similar to non-self. And so, for instance, in Alzheimer's, there's it's an amazing process, and I hope that we get to speak about Alzheimer's in some detail this evening, because though it's not classified as autoimmunity, it's a very similar mechanism to something like multiple sclerosis or dementia or Parkinson's. It's the immune system reacting in a preservation way to protect the brain. And there's a body of literature that's medical science talk for research that is showing that it's not only our adaptive immune system, but it's our innate immune system in Alzheimer's that is reacting to changes in some of the protein structures of our brain, which is what beta amyloid is. It's a protective protein. And so we go through this process to try to clean out and break down all the trash in our brain. And consequently, if there's strange proteins forming through, say, mutations, then it leads to these degenerative process and a constant stimulation or upregulation of inflammation. Now, in Alzheimer's, the inflammation process can start downstream years and years before, and that's what I was speaking to. And so in this long-winded response to your request is that, yes, so say someone has a chronic Epstein-Barr virus exposure or mold toxicity exposure or leaky gut from inflammation through a dysbiosis, those slow inflammatory processes will start years before and then eventually have deleterious effect upstream, which manifests as signs and symptoms we call Alzheimer's. Did that get
it for you, Carol? Time that somebody actually exhibits true signs and symptoms of Alzheimer's I want to clarify that Alzheimer's is a type of dementia, so or even other dementias, they can start much earlier in the form of pretty much none of us would recognize as being anything to be overly concerned about for later on in life, correct?
That's exactly right. And so you know, the take home and the, I think the importance of our conversation should be, yes, we speak about the mechanism, but I want your listening audience to know that they have within their control the choices to make lifestyle changes that can affect them 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years down the road. And we know this to be true now, which is very, very exciting. You know, one of my colleagues, Terry Walls, who wrote the Walls Protocol, completely reversed her multiple sclerosis, which is another type of autoimmune neural degeneration, though it's specifically the myelin sheath, by simply changing her diet primarily. There are a few other things in her protocol, but she just started eating lots of clean protein from grass-fed animals and vegetables. I mean, she's adamant about it, 10 to 11, 12 servings a day of different colored vegetables. And I think that's really important for our listening audience to know. There are some natural anti-inflammatory compounds you can use. But most importantly, lifestyle changes that you can go through as a preventative thing. Like having yourself tested for toxic elements, making sure that you don't live in moldy environments, making certain that your gut function is healthy, and on and on. And this is why we could be speaking like this for hours, if not days.
Forever and a day we could talk about this. So let's just start with the basics, okay? Let's just go with we've talked about leaky gut before, but, you know, if we use your words and we say that it is a downstream approach, let's go upstream. Let's start with the beginning and say, all right, look, our gut is off. The immune system is initiated in the gut. So now the immune system gets initiated, the inflammatory response starts, and we've been exposed in different manners, which could lead to different symptoms for specific or different types of diagnoses, meaning, you know, like MS or something that you've just talked about. And then ultimately, because we haven't been able to put those pictures together until much later or even if ever, then we might lead ourselves into a dementia situation. So would it stand to reason, and you tell me what you know about this, and I'm just posing this as a question because I'm kind of like saying, all right, let's take on the adage of for tonight, you know, let's just talk about the possibility. So does it stand to reason that once someone reaches that particular phase of the process, is it conceivable to think that any of this can be reversed? And have you seen it?
Oh, my God, yes. Yes, and I'm laughing because attended in March a certification program, and the title was Reversing to Cognitive Decline. And it's a certification program that the Institute for Functional Medicine put on, run primarily from the most preeminent researcher in reversing cognitive decline, Dale Bredesen. And we have a whole protocol. And the reason I was laughing is the last slide in his presentation. I can actually read it to you. Cognitive decline, i.e. think of dementia, associated with Alzheimer's disease can now be reversed and improvement sustained using a personalized program approach that is targeted to the underlying pathophysiology. In other words, so Alzheimer's way, way downstream at the end result of all these imbalances that are taking place in individuals' lifestyle. And so when you ask, can it be reversed? Yes. And I would encourage individuals listening, I suspect Dale Bredesen has YouTube videos of some of his reversal studies. I'm not certain of that because I haven't looked at them. But they're absolutely heartening, absolutely beautiful. And these are individuals. I remember one woman in particular. She was in her 50s. She was a high-level tax consultant for a federal agency, I think, or some sort of like that. And so she had to be on her game all the time with numbers. And in her mid to early 50s, she lost it. She was full-blown Alzheimer's. She could not function. She was on disability. She went through Dale's protocol and completely reversed it, got back to work. And it was like, you know, you shake your head and say, how can this be? This flies in the face of what we're being told medically. And that's a sad thing because the allopaths do not understand this approach yet. But from a functional point of view, absolutely, we can reverse these things. And the earlier we take into consideration our lifestyle and begin to practice mindfulness in our lifestyle, the less risk and chances that we have for developing these things. So that was the long-winded answer to your question. Yes.
Well, okay. I appreciate the long-winded answer because it gave me way of to leading into a couple of other questions. And because we're discussing cognition tonight, I can't remember what those were. So maybe we should start with me on that protocol. How about that?
Yeah. No, I think you're doing fine, Carol. Yes.
Thank you. But sometimes I wonder too, and I think we all do, and especially
Pardon
me.
We all do. You know, I think, you know, when we talk about cognitive decline and dementia, including Alzheimer's, it's an absolutely terrifying process. Mostly because one, there is no hope offered if we stay stuck in the allopathic model. There is no help. There is no hope from a traditional allopathic model. But there is if you jump out of that and begin looking at the systemic approach, what I call systems biology approach. See, I would say that the conditions that we're citing, like dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, these are the names of the end consequence of imbalances that have existed, as we said, for years. And there are multiple causes of these declines. It's not just one thing like leaky gut or Epstein-Barr virus. There are often multiple causes for this chronic inflammatory and immunological change. But that's, you know, what we can speak about tonight. And I also hope that we can talk about some remedies, you know, what are the things that your listening audience wants to participate in terms of being proactive, right?
That's right. And I think that we should reserve some time to talk about being proactive. I think that anybody that's listened to our series at this point has a pretty good idea of what they, what the autoimmune response is about, what internal inflammatory responses are about. We talked a little bit about Epstein-Barr. We've kind of brought it all into leaky gut. And so now with this final series and talking about dementia, I really didn't get this connection until like right now in that you're right. This is like the end result to the cumulative scenario to what happens in the body. And you're right. There really is no hope from the traditional world in medicine. But the non-traditional world, there are a lot of things that can be done to either stave or actually, you know, reverse, as you just said. So I think we should give people hope tonight. You want to talk about a long Long-winded answer?
I would sure
yeah,
like
there's,
to.
There's
yeah.
a long-winded thing there, too. Let's give some hope, and let's talk about what kinds of remedies to get. Let's just move right into it and start talking about those
good.
Remedies and
well,
give people some ideas that,
so,
you know, hey, not just a doom yeah. sentence.
Yeah, well, and I'll start by saying this, Carol. I just came back from an annual symposium in L.A. of the Institute for Functional Medicine, and fortunately, the theme of this year's symposium was the dynamic brain. So the entire 3 days was spent looking at the pathophysiology of cognitive decline, dementias, Alzheimer's, and brain traumas, and how it, you know, what's it how's it manifesting? And in the course of this 3-day symposium and the course of the 3-day certification back in March, there was one common theme that unequivocally rose to the top as the most efficient, effective, and beneficial thing that we can do to prevent and even reverse some of these conditions. And that is the word exercise. And it doesn't matter how, when, or how much, just get out and move the body and use the body. And there, I saw study after study after study. I heard researcher after researcher speak about what's the best way that you can stimulate brain-derived neurotrophic factor. What's the best way you can stimulate testosterone? What's the best way you can stimulate nerve growth factor? What's the best way you can address chronic stress response? And exercise is always at the top of that list. And that doesn't mean that I want your listening audience to go out and start running 10Ks if they haven't been doing that, but to commit to using their bodies for 45 minutes a day is start with 15 minutes, 5 days a week. But there's, you know, we can talk about specifics that way. But in a general global sense, I think it's beyond the scope of our talk tonight to go into the specifics of exercise physiology and routines. But what I do want to emphasize is absolutely get out and exercise, lift weights, and do cardiovascular things. Yeah.
Can
so
we
that's a good start, Carol?
Can we do a good start with just getting up and moving around and not being so sedentary? Can we do that? Can we start small?
Sure. Well,
and then
I would, yes. And I would say, but I get this a lot from patients. Well, I'm busy all day. You know, I work in a doctor's office and I'm up moving around. And so doesn't that count as my exercise? And I'd say, no, that's not intentional. That's what your body has acclimated and adapted to. That's your normal. What we need to do when we speak about exercise is to have intention. That I'm going to put those running shoes on and I'm going to go out for 15, you know, like a half hour walk. I'm going to walk 15 mm-hmm. minutes out and I'm going to walk 15 minutes back. Start with something like that. Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hold a plank for as long as I can. Just get down on the floor, put yourself in the top of a push-up position and hold it as long as you can until your muscles shake and quiver and you fall down on your nose. That's what simple things like that. If you can do a push-up from your knees, start there. If you need to use a table or a wall, start there. But just get out and start using. There's so many benefits to exercise. I'll give you an idea. You know what? Go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's all right. Go ahead.
Right. I was just going to say, you know, I'm 65 years of age, and I've always motivated by training when I had a goal in mind. And in the past couple of years, my life has been kind of so busy that, you know, I'd go to the gym and I would do this walk and I'd do this jog and this, but it just wasn't enough. So after attending the certification course in March, I said, you know, I came home and told my wife, Donnie, I'm going to commit to a triathlon, not a Ironman type of thing, but I'm going to commit to training for an Olympic length where by the end of the summer, I'll be fit enough to run a 10K and swim a half a mile and do a 25-mile bike ride. And that works for me personally. But some people don't need to do that kind of motivational pull.
I think that you know, anybody that moves around, I want to kind of get back to the premise of exercise, and from what I'm gathering from you, please clarify, exercise means oxygenate, right? It means get those cells point where
basic physiological concept, you're oxygenating tissue and hence stimulating the production of ATP, i.e. energy. So you're bringing oxygen in, you're making better energy, but at the same time then you're also removing waste out of the cells as well. So we can call those toxicants. And so this is a double benefit, and that's just right down at the sheer cellular biology level. When you're
right.
moving in good stuff and you're moving out bad stuff, yes. And then if you start
I'm doing that on purpose because I'm kind of building on what you said earlier in terms of the buildup mm-hmm. that occurs in dementia and the brain, and the buildup that occurs just from having a chronic inflammatory response in the body.
Yeah.
There's just buildup in the cells and in the tissue, and so given
yes.
that, exercise then helps to cleanse that.
Yes,
and I
absolutely.
Think that's what I'm hearing. So I'm really going basic here, so people understand. Well, why exercise? You know, if I do this, what benefit am I going to get? Well, it means that we just said that if dementia is the end result of a cumulative environment from, you say, 30 years of your life, then it stands to reason that by exercising and oxygenating and cleansing, because it's just a natural form of cleansing and getting rid of the sludge in the body, that you would help to stave off the rest of that disease pattern. Would you agree with that?
Not only would I agree, but I would add that not only are you circulating healthier nutrients, and this, again, would come into, well, if you eat healthier nutrients, you're going to supply that more adequately to your tissues and cells. But also, when we consider chronic inflammatory conditions, we think about stress response as well. And I'm not talking about mental and emotional stress necessarily, but one of the consequences of, say, having toxicity in a cell or a mutated protein because of a SNP caused by a toxic element, that immunological reaction and inflammatory cascade will also create a stress response. And exercise reduces the stress response as well, and hence reduces that whole inflammatory process in that regard. And then you have the stimulation of all those wonderful endorphins, which keep the brain also energized and feeling good and oxygenated as well. So, yes, it has a direct effect on reducing stress, inflammation, moving toxins out of the body as well.
Okay.
But, you
know,
I was mentioning earlier kind of when I went through that description of why exercise is so important from a cognitive perspective. And there are chemicals that our brain secretes called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And that's a stimulating compound that we make to help regenerate our nerves. And there's another one called nerve growth factor. And these are substances that we're making every day, but they are not made well when we're inflamed. And exercise has been shown to be the primary inducer of these peptides or these chemicals in our brain to help keep our nerves plastic. We call it neuroplasticity. So it's a way to keep us adapting and young in our central nervous system.
So All right, we've got exercise. What else gives us hope with this? What other factors?
So I in order to reduce major immunological and inflammatory reactions, there are numerous diets that profess to do this. And then depending on our genotype and depending on our history, that would determine how that diet might interface with our own physiology. But I would say across the board for most of us, regardless of ethnicity or nationalities or heritage, a Paleolithic orientation is appropriate. And what I mean by that is a diet that is remnant of what our genes are accustomed to enjoying going back to its earliest times. And that looks like a plant-based diet with clean, unsaturated, fatty meats and fish that we eat much of. So it looks like eating grass-fed beef and pork. It looks like eating free-range chicken. It looks like eating wild-caught fish. And it looks like eating a rainbow of colors of fruits and vegetables as a predominant source of intake all day long. It does not look very white. It does not have a lot of white color in this diet. It doesn't have a lot of grains. In fact, a true paleo would have absolutely no grains whatsoever. But if one was interested in really pushing their process, this process, load up on as much organic fruit and vegetable as you can, and clean, healthy proteins, as I just described. That would be the next big step, Carol.
So we go back to diet and exercise. Okay, what else?
Well, yes. Well, attitude. I would say modifying our life so that we are in control of it and mindful in our life. And what does that look like? You know, I have patients all the time that come in, and they're leaving the house at 6:30 in the morning, commuting for an hour and a half, work extremely stressful jobs, eat on the run, eat in front of computers. They are eating processed foods from a cafeteria, drive home at night, have three glasses of wine, pass out at 8 o'clock, and that's their life during the week. Then they decompress on Friday and Saturday nights by going out for dinner, having more wine and restaurant quality foods. And they wonder why their C-reactive protein's high and their weight is going up and they have no energy and their cortisol levels are all over the place. And so what I would call lifestyle management is finding ways to be mindful through the day, so one could sit in an office environment, close their eyes, put their hand on their belly, and practice diaphragmatic breathing for 2 minutes, and it would turn off the sympathetic nervous system response. That's the fight or flight mechanism.
What does that mean?
What it means, Carol, is
sympathetic.
Our nervous system works in a give and take, yin and yang kind of process where something gets turned on and then it gets turned off. Something gets ramped up and then it gets ramped down. Something gets contracted tight and then it gets relaxed. And so it could be a muscle, it could be the pancreatic islet cells, it could be any kind of tissue or gland. And it's regulated by the nervous system. The parasympathetic is that part or branch that sends the message to our brain that life is good and I'm grazing in the grass. The sympathetic, on the other hand, is the one that says, uh-oh, I got to run for my life or fight. So it ramps us up and gets our physiology, organs, and glands ready for defending or protection or fleeing. So the balance of those two nervous systems are extremely important, and we can control it by simple little things, not simple little, but by a huge big thing, as simple, though, as breathing from the diaphragm. The diaphragm is this big belly-shaped muscle. It's a large muscle, sits right under our rib cage, and when it contracts, it pushes our belly out. So we call it belly breathing. And when you breathe with the diaphragm, it encourages this parasympathetic tone. When you breathe through the chest and the intercostal muscles of the chest, so, you know, your listening audience, as they're sitting here listening to me go through this palaver's pontification, they could put one hand on their belly and one hand on their chest and watch their breath. And if they do not initiate their breath with their belly and they initiate it with their ribs, then they're breathing what I call upside down. And they will be breathing in a sympathetic response. It's a stress response, Carol. And so learning to breathe diaphragmatically, just sitting in the office for a minute and concentrating on the belly breath, turns that stress response off, turns inflammation off. So that's
okay.
Another one.
All right, So breathing.
Breathing diaphragmatically.
I'm sorry, I'm kind of breaking it down to really simple things here just because I want people to know that it's a simple thing that actually still work, you know? It's the simple stuff that will actually keep us from getting into trouble later on. So exercise, diet, lifestyle management, basic deep breathing and just breathing in itself is cleansing, because you get that oxygen in and it gets through those cells, and it pretty much just kind of helps to cleanse through some of that other stuff, move through that sludge. And that's really the point I wanted to make was, you know, through the years, through the difference, you know, if we go back to the lifestyle that you just described, in that, you know, people come home or they work really stressful jobs and then they sit in traffic and then they come home and they drink some wine and they pass out at 8 o'clock and they do that whole thing every day, creating stuff in their body. They're creating stuff that just can't seem to escape. So it's got to go somewhere. It's got to do something. And it can manifest its way through the body into an internal inflammatory situation, which then ultimately can lead to sludge everywhere in the body, including the brain, which will develop certain plaques that we all know to be protein plaques that cause Alzheimer's or other types of dementia. So it's just what we do on a daily basis, and in order to undo that, we incorporate the simple stuff, the exercise, the diet, the basic lifestyle management, and we're good, right? I mean, not necessarily, you know, is it 100%, but it definitely will help to keep us from developing some real serious issues, right?
Yes, absolutely. And remember that most toxins that are kept in the body are what we call lipophilic, meaning that if a toxin comes into our body and we can dissolve it, we wash it right out of our body. So the stuff that is dangerous and damaging to us likes to hang out in our fatty tissue, and including the central nervous system. And one thing that we didn't touch on a whole lot here tonight was that there is a correlation between inflammation in the gut leading to leaky gut, leading to inflammation of the blood-brain barrier, and hence leaky brain. So that's what you were speaking to is a direct correlation between if your gut's leaking and inflamed, then there's absolutely a trend towards leaky brain. We should also,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, we're running out of time, but I want to make sure that I cover some natural agents for modulating inflammation too, different herbs and nutrients that though, you know, I won't go through specifics, it wouldn't be fair or ethically correct, but I can certainly point our listening audience into some really wonderful nutraceuticals that are beneficial for reducing inflammation as well.
Go ahead. Let's do it.
Well, you know, I would say that across the board, the most powerful anti-inflammatory agent that has years and years of research behind it is fish oil, EPA, DHA. Absolutely the best. And so that it helps in so many different functions of the body, but the fish oils push these anti-inflammatory prostaglandins. That's huge. Different nutraceuticals that support detoxification, like N-acetylcysteine, absolutely amazing nutraceutical. And sometimes you'll see that as NAC. And what I'd encourage your listening audience to do is to find physicians who are knowledgeable in some of these things, functional medicine doctors like myself that are well versed in how to use nutraceuticals. Alpha lipoic acid, it's an insulin sensitizer and it's an antioxidant, very powerful one as an example. And then there's numerous herbal botanicals like curcumin, which is the yellow powdery extract of turmeric. It has probably the most research on it, but that's actually one of the components of curry in the Asian cultures. Ginger is another wonderful systemic anti-inflammatory. Boswellia is another wonderful anti-inflammatory. Capsicum, cayenne pepper, another. Bromelain from it's an extract from pineapple. It has wonderful anti-inflammatory qualities as well. And then my new and favorite kid on the block here and it's not an anti-inflammatory, but it's a resolvent. These are what are called SPMs, or specialized pro-resolving mediators. They're an enzymatic shifted change substance that we take fish oil in our bodies and we make these substances called resolvents, which literally turn off, they heal the inflammatory response. So when I have patients who are in these chronic conditions, adding the SPMs in on these protocols literally helps to turn down and heal the inflammatory process. They're huge, hugely
very
important.
Nice.
I mean, just, yeah. So those are just a few that I'd recommend.
Fabulous. Thank you. We have a couple of blog questions. I think you've answered a couple of them, but there's one here that I think it's a good question to kind of tie in what we've just talked about. But before, we've got just a few minutes left, but so let me just read this question. I have several autoimmune illnesses, psoriasis, psoriatic arthritis, Sjogren's syndrome, hearing loss, and my mom who had Alzheimer's, and a mom who had Alzheimer's. Does this put me at higher risk for Alzheimer's?
Probably, though I would not like to say, oh, yes, definitely. But what I would encourage this individual to do is to have her APOE4 lipoprotein tested to see if she's APOE positive. There's a very strong correlation genetically between this particular lipoprotein and inheritance. So it's APOE4 is the lipoprotein that is the one that's highest risk for familial Alzheimer's. So I'd encourage that individual to do that.
And
but again,
I'm sorry.
I was going to say
if you are positive.
It's not a death sentence. What it means is that it's actually good information to know, because then you can live, you would be more motivated to live this healthier lifestyle and stay true to yourself and go through self-nurturance and really be mindful in your lifestyle. It may be that bit of information that kind of encourages us forward, Carol.
Great. And so that is, I'm just going to say it one more time, it's the APOE, APOE4 test.
Correct.
So that everybody can get that, or not necessarily get that, but understand that it's out there and it's certainly something to
It's huge. It's one of the predominant precursors for Alzheimer's, yes.
And then, you answered, we definitely did. We had a couple of questions on leaky gut and the correlation. I think you just tied that one in. So I'm just making sure, anybody that's on the phones, that if you want to ask a question, now's the time to do it because we're running out of time if you're going to push the number one to ask a question. If we've answered your questions already, good. I'm glad. Thank you for hanging out with us. Here's one maybe that we kind of touched on but didn't really specifically touch on. So it says, ever since my husband had a heart attack at age 44, his memory has never been the same. Is it the inflammation, and should I worry that he's developing a dementia that can't be controlled?
Yeah, well, in a situation such as that, there's definitely some vascular insufficiency that should be explored, reduction in blood flow supply to the brain. Certainly, he probably suffered some type of trauma, which can also affect the brain as well. But there would be a lot more investigative diagnostics that you do, like does he have high level of fibrinogen circulating in his blood? Does he have high levels of ferritin? These are biomarkers that suggest that his body may still be in acute phase response. Is his C-reactive protein, which is inflammatory, still high? And on and on. And he may be on medications that are also interfering as well. But again, improving circulation is hallmark. Exercise, exercise, exercise.
Okay, great. We are just about out of time. Would you like
again.
To... Again. I'm sorry. Again, I know. Would you like to, let's just recap on how people can get in touch with you, and I think it's important for everyone to realize that you do long-distance consultations.
I do Skype consultations, all over the world, actually. Yeah. So if through my website, www.drbump.com, that's drbump.com, I can be reached through email through the website as well. And certainly the office information is there as well. So that's the easiest way to get in touch with me. It's just through the website, which is in the process of a major overhaul right now, so which is good.
Good for you. And I'm going to just let everybody know that you'll be back next year. And we're gonna pick some specific topics for next year, and kind of hone in on those topics and pick Dr. Bump's brain some more because it's just fascinating, just absolutely fascinating. If what you're doing are the if you're adding to your brain those supplements that you mentioned earlier, I'm gonna start tomorrow.
Well, thanks, Carol. Do the brain game things too, like Brain HQ and Lean Manasi. Those are always wonderful things to keep the nerves stimulated.
Right.
Well, all right.
That's great. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
We're going to do
pleasure.
some special things too, and Dr. Bump's going to join us, so we'll be announcing that as soon as we pull that together. But I can't thank you enough. Every single time that you're on, I sit and take notes, and I don't generally do that. So I want to say thank you personally because I always pick up something from you, and I'm just so grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. It is a pleasure.
Oh, no, thanks. Our next show is going to be, where are we? We are going to be, that'll be July 13th, and we are going to have a recurring, one of our recurring favorites, Joanne Ficchini will be back to talk about some of her wonderful issues with massage and what she's doing. She's doing some fabulous work with different types of processes, inflammatory processes as well, and the results that she's getting are just fabulous, and she's always a great guest, so we're looking forward to her coming back. And we've got a couple of other people that you know and you don't know. We've got some surprises scheduled, and we're going to do some things toward the end of the year to kind of pull some things together that I've been talking about as it relates to healthcare. So I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. Thank you for sharing us, blogging us, and for always just kind of keeping us on our toes, because the questions that we get, and Dr. Bump, I think you'd agree with this, the questions that we get sometimes are pretty challenging, and I just am very grateful for the people who are listening and just kind of throw it out there for us, and it makes us all think a little bit.
Yep, they're absolutely insightful. Thank you.
Yeah. So thank you, everybody. And on that note, we're going to say goodnight, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Good night, Carol.
Good night, Dr.
Thank you again. Okay. Bye now.
Bye.